This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
This morning we're looking at the third of the seven signs in John's gospel. These seven miracles or signs are recounted to us, according to John, so that we might believe. Now, three of the key features of this particular sign are contrasted from the first two signs. One, this sign is far more public than the other two. The first sign, the water into wine, only mom and the disciples and the servants knew. The healing of the official son was only witnessed by his servants and his household. This sign, however, was done in public. Jesus specifically came to a place where there were hundreds, a huge crowd of sick people gathered there. This sign is also different in this regard. The response to this sign is decidedly negative, whereas the response to the first two signs was overwhelmingly positive. And this begins to show us the very purposeful, the intentionally provocative nature of Jesus' ministry. And then third and finally, the difference is that this sign takes place in Jerusalem. The first two signs happen in Cana, which is in northern Israel. Jerusalem is the home of the temple with the Pool of Bethesda located just outside the temple. And this means that the news of this particular sign traveled very quickly to the religious leaders who were, as you heard, they were incensed. They were outraged. When I was in seminary, I took a course called Pastoral Counseling. It was a great course, and I remember learning there for the first time about presenting issues. Presenting issues. A presenting issue is the reason that a person has come to you, perhaps upset. They've come to you seeking some kind of help. For example, say a parishioner becomes because they're upset about the flower arrangements or a song or whatever and wants me to fix it. That's the presenting issue. So I begin asking questions, and I discover that this person's father passed away 3 weeks ago. That's the primary issue. He's not upset about flowers. He doesn't know how to express his grief, and so that grief is continually looking for ways to express itself. Well, this story is about two issues. The presenting issue, the man's physical sickness, and the primary issue, the deeper sickness of the soul. And so let's look at this passage under three headings, three questions. What do you want? Will it really make you well? And how then do you get well? What do you want? Will it really make you well? And how then do you get well? So let's begin with what do you want? If you've been around Christ Church for a while, you know we run the Alpha Course. But perhaps you've missed the larger story about Alpha. You know, the Alpha Course is not just something that we do. It's a worldwide movement. Around 30 million people have attended Alpha Courses in 169 countries in 112 languages. And we should ask the question, why? Why has it been so successful? And of course, we would say, well, it's God's blessing, and that is true. But also from a sociological perspective, I would say that Alpha has thrived because it gives people something that is so lacking in our world. It gives people a safe place to ask and to process life's most important questions. And if you think about it, there is hardly a place in our culture where you can safely express yourself and ask questions without being attacked, without being judged. And Alpha provides that, and that is something that people really need. We need it because burning in every human heart is the question of ultimate importance. What do I want? What is my life all about? And even though deep down that question is in all of us, we actually spend very little time trying to answer it. Well, Jesus, while in Jerusalem, he went to this pool of Bethesda, where a large crowd of people were gathered with all kinds of physical ailments, because it was believed that an angel would come and stir the waters, and then the first person who could get in the pool after the angel stirred the waters would be healed. You can imagine the pools and the colonnades and hundreds of people, physically hurting people, spread out on the ground, all waiting to get in the pool when the water moves. And Jesus walks right into this chaos and sees a man who's been paralyzed for 38 years. And the text tells us that Jesus knew him. Not that somebody told Jesus about him. Jesus didn't need anyone to tell him about him. Jesus knew him. He had divine, intimate knowledge of this man and his situation. And knowing his desperate situation, Jesus has the nerve to look at him in the face and say, "Do you want to be well? Do you want to be well?" What is Jesus doing? Jesus is trying to get underneath this man's desire simply for physical healing. In essence, he's asking the man, "What is it that you think is going to make you truly well? What do you really want?" And I think that's the question Jesus is asking us this morning. What do you want? What is it that you believe deep down, if I only have this, then my life will go well? Interestingly, as people, just generally speaking, as people dig down deep and try to answer that question, they consistently come up with the same conclusion. And it's this: I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I want. I don't know what is going to satisfy this longing in my soul. What do you really want? What is primary? Maybe you don't know. But I think deep down we all know something is missing. Something is not quite right. There's a void that seems insatiable, that it can't be satisfied. So that's the first question. What do you want? What do you really want? And the second question from Jesus is implied in the first: will it really make you well? Is what you really want, is that really going to make you well? You know, the King James translates this verse, will it make you whole? Or Jesus asked the question, do you want to be made whole? So it's as if Jesus is asking this man, what do you really want? And will it really make you whole? You know, one of the main messages of the Bible, really from beginning to end, is that there is no true human wholeness apart from God. Now, that doesn't mean that people can't live a good life. That doesn't mean people won't experience good things in life. But what it does mean is that even the best of lives, apart from God, will still leave us searching. The void still remains, so that even life's greatest achievements don't satisfy and leave us asking this question, is this all that there is? You know, actor Jim Carrey, he said not too long ago, it was a very long interview, but in that interview he said, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they've ever dreamed of so that they can see that it's not the answer. He's basically admitting, I've done everything I've ever dreamed of doing. I've gotten everything in life anyone could ever imagine. And it's not the answer. He tried to fill the void with what our culture tells us will truly satisfy. And it didn't work. The Bible tells us that we are made for life with God. And nothing less than that will fill the void, no matter how good it is. The famous French philosopher and mathematician, Blaise Pascal, he wrote about this very thing. He says, what else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness, of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace. This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are. And though none can help, since this infinite abyss or void can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object. In other words, by God Himself. So John goes to great lengths to explain that the paralytic has deeper issues than just this paralysis. And we see it in the text. In verse 7, he tells us that the man had no one to help him in the pool. He had no one. Being disabled, he was excluded from the temple worship. He was relationally ostracized and cut off from the community. So he's got that deeper issue. But there's something even deeper still. Verse 14, Jesus runs into the man in the temple. And that tells us that the man is being reintegrated back into the community. He's at the temple for worship. But Jesus runs into him and he says this bizarre thing. He says, sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. Is Jesus saying that his suffering, his paralysis, was a result of his sin? No, that's not what Jesus is saying, and we know that because in John chapter 9, Jesus specifically dispels that notion talking about the man born blind. They want to know, well, who sinned? Did this man sin or did his parents sin? Is that why he's born blind? And Jesus says, no, he's not blind because anyone sinned. He's blind so that God may be glorified. So what is Jesus saying to this man? He's saying to the man, look, there is something even more troubling than your former paralysis. It's the sickness of the soul. We might call that sin. That's what the Bible calls it. All the ways, big and small, that we reject God in an order to maintain our autonomy. All the ways that we attempt to justify ourselves out of the sense of our own goodness. You know, Jesus certainly cared for the man's physical well-being. He also cared for his social healing and well-being. But by far, Jesus' greatest concern is for the man's deepest sickness, the root of it all, which is his estrangement from God. And until you heal that root, no wholeness can be experienced. And to our surprise, who are the greatest sinners in the story? Not the paralytic. The religious leaders. Good news for us. The religious leaders. They're the polar opposite of the paralytic. They were the most religiously devout people. None of us have ever met a person as religiously devout as these people were. But even so, despite their religiosity, here's a man who has been healed, he has been made well after being paralyzed for 38 years, and all they care about is the fact that he picked up his mat on the Sabbath. How sick and hard-hearted can you be? How'd they get that way? Well, they got that way because they lived by sin's greatest lie, which is that you can be justified before God by your own goodness. And this story shows us that even the most religious, even those of us who come and worship, suffer from the sin sickness of the soul. Perhaps more. And this is why Paul says in Romans 3 that all are under the power of sin, and no one will be made right before God by keeping the law. Even being meticulously religious is not going to make you well. Which brings us to our last question. Well, then how did you get well? Well, the answer in the text is simple, but dramatic. Verses 8 and 9, Jesus said to him, get up, take up your bed, and walk. And at once the man was healed. He took up his bed and walked. And what John is telling us through this story, this sign, is that the only thing that will heal the sickness of our souls and make us whole is a personal encounter with Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus consistently points to himself as the one who can fill that void in our hearts. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. You know, the majority of Jesus' teaching is about who he is and what he came to do. Jesus had the audacity to claim that the meaning of life hinges upon what we do with him. And so John shows us in this sign that the only way to be made well, to be made whole, is through a personal encounter with Christ. And you may wonder, personal encounter with Jesus, what in the heck is that? I don't know what that means. Just tell me what I need to do. Well, the first thing to notice, at least from this particular story, and this is what we're talking about, this particular story, is that the paralytic didn't do anything. Jesus found him, not the other way around. And so we might say, in this case, you know, encountering Jesus is most fundamentally not about something that we do, but rather something he does. The paralytic didn't find Jesus. Jesus found him. Jesus said, "You didn't choose me," to the disciples. He said, "I chose you." And so you're saying, well, so you're telling me I don't do anything? Well, that's not right either. Because in this story, what did the paralytic do? Well, I'll tell you what he did. And he wasn't even aware that he was doing it, but he did it. He wasn't aware of this, but by going to the pool, he put himself in a place where the Lord was likely to show up. He put himself in a place where the Lord was likely to show up. Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." Mark 2:17, Jesus says, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And so by going to the pool, the paralytic put himself in a place where he was more likely to encounter the Lord. By going to the pool, the man was acknowledging that he had a need. He had a problem that he could not solve by himself. So what do you need to do? Well, put yourself where the Lord is likely to show up. Go and serve the poor. Come to worship. You know, go to Alpha. Participate in a life group. Read the Bible. I've heard multiple stories about all those things, about people meeting the Lord there. Acknowledge before the Lord that you have a problem, that you have a void, that no matter what you do, you cannot satisfy. Acknowledge before him that you have a problem that you cannot fix through your own effort. The way to wholeness is an encounter with Jesus. You know, notice that Jesus, just like the other two signs, Jesus doesn't do anything but say a word. He doesn't touch the man. He doesn't, you know, have to conjure up any. He just says a word. "Get up, take up your bed, and walk." Who else says a word and it happens? "Let there be light." And there was light. Jesus is God incarnate. He doesn't have to conjure up power. The healing of this man's body was effortless for Jesus. It cost him nothing. But to heal the sickness of the soul, it cost him everything. It cost God nothing to create the world. He simply spoke and it was there. but it cost him everything to save sinners. Do you want to be well? You know, St. Augustine said this, "It will not be held against you that you cannot bring together your wounded limbs, but that you reject him who wants to heal you." Do you want to be well? Well, if you do, cry out to him. Because it says, everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved.